and said that he kind of agreed with him. It wasn't very well cooked, and it was kind of cold, and he didn't like it either. When the reporters asked him why he threw so much of his food away, he said he just hadn't had time to eat it. But we are doing a lot of very serious studies about the fact that so much of the food is being thrown away because it's not things that appeal to the kids, or it's not well prepared, or it's not things that are particularly nutritious. Carol Foreman is trying to completely change that program so that its first criteria is nutritional standards. And she is looking far more at changing greatly the kinds of foods that are available. She's also trying to look at making that service more available. Most of the major metropolitan areas do take advantage of the school lunch program, but there are many rural areas where perhaps the nutritional needs are even greater, which have not taken advantage of it. So the direction is changing because of Carol Foreman and because Bob Berglund and the other top officials are backing her up on it. We are also, as the U.S. Department of Agriculture, being made the lead agency on a human nutrition study that is now being done. Because in the past, we really have not given the kind of national attention that we should to the questions of human nutrition in general. It will be a combined program with agriculture, HEW, the Food and Drug Administration, the President's Office, and several others. But we'll be putting vastly increased amounts of money into research on human nutrition and information and education of citizens on human nutrition. Over here, the light hair, yeah. Just behind you, right there, yeah. You. Yes. I agree. We're already doing that, and we're doing a number of positive things. One of the things is that a woman named Henrietta MacArthur from Georgia has become the assistant administrator for the assistant secretary for that rural development and farmers' home, and she is trying to herself to undertake the project of employment discrimination in farmers' home. Yeah, those are going to be much harder for us to change because of the interconnection between the Farmers Home Program and the civil service. And I am the first to criticize the civil service because they're giving me hell trying to make any changes in my own department. I, for example, have one employee who was a political appointee, did not come from within the ranks, and I went and did some audits and found that that person was not doing any work. And so I went and said, I want to get rid of this person. And they said, what has that person done wrong? And I said, he hadn't done any work. And they said, that's not wrong. It is terrible. Trying to look at a variety of promotional tests and how you get on. We've got to have some help with the civil service, and I think Alan Campbell will do that for us. Well, it's not going to change overnight, but Bob Berglund really is going to try, and we're going to help him. Yes?
I wanted to discuss something about the forestry program.
Fine.
I live in northern New York State, and I'm on a conservation crew that's pruning of white pine, which I've just gotten a job.
Great.
Yes. There are two women working in the forestry department, which is one of the situations. I was wondering how the Department of Agriculture would encourage local soil conservation departments to make jobs available. I mean, it's not that they don't hire women, it's just that women don't know the jobs are available because they're not on the priority list. The other thing is, what is the Department of Agriculture thinking about using the cultivation of trees as an alternative heat source? Because I know that in rural areas, many people heat with wood exclusively.
Okay.
And it would also be a very good way of employing people where there is a high unemployment rate in rural areas. And the cultivation of trees on a large scale would employ a lot of people and be a human intensive way rather than an energy intensive.
We haven't made a definite plan on our Forest Service. We have some study papers that are now before the Policy and Review Committee, which I'm on, Carol Foreman's on, others are on, trying to look at a variety of issues relating to the Forest Service. For example, if you look at the cost of housing, your natural reaction is to say, let's cut more wood, because the more wood you cut, the lower the price of timber will be, and therefore the more we can keep the cost of housing down. And yet, if you cut wood in too great an amount, you end up with the result that over a long number of years, you will simply run out of timber, which we cannot afford to do. You also have to look at the forest in terms of wilderness areas, the preservation of natural areas for our citizens to enjoy, and a variety of other purposes. So there are a lot of tight ropes that we are now trying to walk, and we really have not found that magic compromise. So I can't answer your question yet, but only to tell you that it is that the Assistant Secretary for the Forest Service is a very conservation-minded person, Rupert Cutler, who was chosen for that qualification. He was a former professor of conservation and natural resources in Michigan, and we are trying to look at how to balance those interests. The same on the use of pesticides, for example. I think we'll have a much more stringent requirements on the use of pesticides, and yet I do think we'll use them in some instances, because in some instances they are necessary to cut down some of the things that are killing a lot of our national forests. One of the things I did a couple of weeks ago was to go to Oregon, and the Forest Service took me out to look at some areas that the tussock moth had damaged, and I brought back a sample tussock moth. To look at some of the areas of clear cutting. And clear cutting shouldn't be used a lot, but there are some very limited instances where that's the best way to get a growth of Douglas fir, for example, but it ought not to be used as much as it has been. You know, there. Yeah, in terms of producing wood at the fastest rate, there are some instances in which that is the most effective way. And that's what I say, it's got to be a balancing of all the forces. For example, another kind of force we're trying to balance is the fact that the more acres we put into wilderness areas, the more intensely you have to manage and cut those acres which are left to provide jobs for people in Oregon, where you have the timber interests and a lot of others. You get one side, those senators from Oregon, saying, you know, we don't care how bad the companies out here have been. We don't care how much they're cutting. We just want to cut more because those are jobs and that's what our communities depend on. Well, that's not a good attitude. And on the other hand, I don't think we can say we're going to cut off all, you know, we don't care about the fact that 3,000 people in your town are going to lose jobs. So it's a balancing act that we're trying to figure out right now. And I'm sorry I can't give you any better answer than that, but we're conscious of it. Yeah. It's going to be easier for us to change those employed in Washington than it is in the field, because every time you've got another layer of management, it's harder to translate the determination that we feel. And so I think it'll take us a little bit longer there. But we have talked about that problem of getting down into the local areas. And I think if you'll give us the 4 years, that by the time we finish, our record will be much better. Yes. Question is, do I think the farmer strike will come about, and if so, what impact will it have on food prices? First, I don't really think there will be a major farmer strike. First, because most farmers cannot themselves afford to be out of farming for that long. They have no way to back themselves up financially. I do think, however, that even the talk of the farmer strike has been productive in the sense of trying to make people conscious of how much we must depend on agriculture to supply food. And the sad part to me is that as we do more and more studies within USDA, the more we find that really what the farmer gets from food sources is but a very minimal part of the entire cost. The costs are more than half the costs are involved in transportation, packaging, marketing, middle level between the farmer and the consumer, and a lot of other things. That's one reason why we're trying to encourage cooperatives, where the farmers themselves can join together to market their own products and get better prices for them. So the answer is that I don't think there will be a major farmer strike, but I do think it's been helpful in the sense of trying to make people aware of the genuine problems there on the farm. One of the other things I've seen happening that I think is really encouraging is the whole movement of women who are part of farm families or who are themselves involved in agriculture and trying to call attention to agricultural concerns. And I think that's going to be a very effective group that I hope will be sympathetic with a lot of our other goals, but that I think we'll do a real good job in helping focus the spotlight on agriculture. Yes, Martha? The food stamp program we're making a number of changes in. First, it was Carol Foreman's idea, which Congress has now adopted, to do away with the purchase requirement for food stamps. As many of you would know, in the past, in order for a family that was entitled to, for example, $120 worth of food stamps, they had to spend, say, $80 in order to purchase the $120 worth. Well, a lot of families could never get together the $80. We have now passed regulations to become effective in probably 6 to 7 months that will eliminate the purchase requirements. The second thing is that she is trying to tighten the requirements and the eligibility to see that those persons who need food stamps most have the greater access. That is necessary in terms of budget restrictions. One of the things, for example, Carol has done is to provide that in terms of students being on food stamps, that they must be available for at least part-time employment, because often it is persons other than students who are most in need of food stamp help. She has tried to change the way food stamp eligibility is determined to see, again, that those who are most in need get greater involvement. And she's really doing a great job. I hope some of you have a chance to hear her, because she's very good. It comes from the consumer movement, and in terms of a person who can really move with the legislature and within the department, she is great. Over here. Yeah. Strategy. As far as we can tell at this time, you may have heard that there is a group within the conference called the Pro Plan Caucus. The Pro Plan Caucus had a meeting last night, and basically that caucus is trying to say that we should, as delegates, adopt the plan of action as it is, without amendments. One of the problems that a delegate from Indiana brought up was that at the Indiana State Convention, when they presented various resolutions, they became so bogged down in points of order, reconsiderations, amendments, and all other parliamentary procedure, they never passed one single plank from the entire Indiana caucus, and there is some concern that that might happen at this convention. And so the pro-plan group was trying to say, let's support the entire plan of action. And then as we started moving into the discussion, you would get groups saying, well, yes, let's support it, except that we have to change the handicapped resolution, or except we have to change the minority resolution, or except we have to change this or that resolution. And so there never was a clear consensus about what could be done there. One of the suggestions was that perhaps we could go ahead and adopt the plan and then look at under new business, seeing if we couldn't add some things. There have been some parliamentary questions raised this morning on the floor about whether or not you would be able to bring up any subject which had already been covered in the plan of action for addition or new things under new business, and there was some thought that that might be not entertained under new business. So there is a lot of ebb and flow right now. There are a lot of meetings to be held over noon. The voting will start this afternoon, and I think we'll be able to tell some. As I say, there have been no negative things I can tell on the floor. I think the Phyllis Schlafly group, as far as I can tell, is having their meeting from 1 to 3 this afternoon in the Astro Hall. I do expect they will have a very large attendance. I'm sure it will be well organized. But I hope that each group can be well organized and respectful of the other.
Thank you. I think it's time to quit. If we can help you in the U.S. Department of Agriculture, that's part of what my job as a woman on the Policy and Budget Committee is. So let us hear from you. Thank you.
On behalf of IWI, we just want to thank you graciously for your briefing from the top of the USDA. Thank you very much, and for those of you who can, please remain for our next speaker, Dr. Donner E. Shalala from Department of Housing and Urban Development.